Well, good morning, Ralph. How are you doing today?
That's fine. Good.
Excellent. You know, Ralph and I get together on a weekly basis, and there's just I think there's so much value and wisdom being raised a preacher's kid, a pastor's kid, and a missionary's kid. Been in church my whole life. You know, been blessed to have very strong conservative teaching, deep Bible truths my whole life. And so heard a lot, seen a lot over the years. But when I talk to Ralph, it's very different. And I asked Ralph last week, I said, you know, I hate to just hoard all of this wisdom and insight. Would you mind if we recorded it? And Ralph was gracious enough to say, sure, if you want to. So if you are listening to the rebroadcast of this, you have any questions, connect with the individual who invited you to participate, or you can call toll-free 888-230-2300. That's 888-230-2300. Ralph, I wanted to do a rewind of last week, and in future weeks, what we'll do is we'll just go ahead and let the tape record, and whatever we pick up, we pick up. But last week you had said, Mark, something to the effect, Mark, do you know how university professors are the same as, are similar as the Pharisees and Sadducees? And I'm like, no. And that was really very deeply profound to me. And so I was wondering if you could articulate that again.
Well, when you come to the end of the Sermon on the Mount, which is a very important part of the gospel. Matthew chapter 7, at the end of that discourse where Jesus has been teaching, it says that people were astonished or amazed because he taught not as the scribes and the Pharisees, but as one in authority. And it just made me think that he was teaching from the law, and he quoted the law and the real meaning of the law, but he was teaching truth as he, the Lord, had experienced it, because after all, he was the author of the law. But it occurred to me that to think further, how do the scribes and the Pharisees teach? Well, they are good students. They're good memorizers. They read all the books. And from those, what they've read, they regurgitate and pass it on to others. Well, theoretically, if you were smart enough, you could go read the same books and you wouldn't need the Pharisees. Unless they're adding their own personal experience. That's what enhances teaching. But an awful lot of times, my experience in the academe is that a lot of professors don't have much experience, practical experience in the fields that they're teaching. They're exceedingly bright, and they've read more on the topic that they teach than anybody else. But what they're doing is they're passing on what they have heard, not what they experience. And when you're being taught, you can really tell the difference between somebody who's passing on to you something that he has learned from others, or whether he's mixing it with his experience. Experience, when you're a student and you have experience, it means that you take what you read and you see how it applies. Then you apply it in your life and thereby test how it works, and you can pass on your experience. I taught in a graduate business school for a number of years, and I had the opposite experience. Somehow I was teaching without ever having taken a business course, capital and so on. And in the 20 years, I guess I've done about everything you shouldn't do and learned in the school of hard knocks what not to do and what works. So most of what I was able to teach my students was don't do this. I've been there, done that. Do it this way. And so combining that with what I then began to read in the textbooks and doing catch-up reading made my teaching a little different from the others because I was kind of like practical pig. I've been there. And so that's where I put together that one little phrase at the in Matthew 7. The people noticed that Jesus was not teaching like a professor, like the scribes and Pharisees. He was teaching as one who was an authority on the subject, meaning he'd experienced what he was talking
about. Yeah, and that just, it blew my mind. I thought, you know, how much, you know, we value experience, which I think is rightfully true, but I had never thought of, you know, Jesus being experienced. I mean, he's God, so of course, but when you brought that to light, it's like when you said, Jesus said, this is what the law says, and then you said, this is what it means.
Well, notice earlier in the Gospel of Matthew, you find Jesus at age 12 in the temple, and already the scribes and the Pharisees, the priests, were astonished at his understanding. And what did he tell his parents? He says, I have to be about my father's business. That was his learning phase, and he was taking in everything that the scribes and Pharisees were saying, and he was kind of saying, well, how does that really apply in life? And so the Sermon on the Mount, he's somewhere around 30 years old. And the temple, in the earlier story, he's 12 years old. So that's the number of years of gestation of the learning that he had been doing. And being about his father's business during that period of his lifetime, I think meant that he was to learn the practical application of the law. He put it to work. What would it, did he do? He was a carpenter. He was a businessman. And he put what he knew of the law into practice. And what indeed was his business? It was relationships. He was building things for people. I don't know whether it was furniture or houses, what it was, but his father was a carpenter. He worked with him, and he had customers, and he had to satisfy them. So he had some practical experience for a number of years before he began his teaching and ministry career.
You know,
incidentally, I would highly recommend for any university, if it was up to me, I'd want all of my professors to have at least 5 years practical experience in their field before they came and taught. Would make a world of difference.
You know, a good friend of mine, Tony, said to me, he says, when the teacher stops being willing to learn from the students, then the teacher turns into a preacher.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
And it's like, huh. It's interesting. There was another good friend of mine, Tom Kuntz, who's the most recent past president of Century 21 worldwide. I mean, he oversaw over 140,000 sales agents in over 70 different countries. And it's amazing to me on how humble he is, where people, I see people that on the surface it wouldn't seem like they've had anything close to the career success that he's had. But he's like so humble to it, and they'll confront him about stuff and say, "Tom, you're wrong, you don't understand," and I'm like, "Wow. Okay." And he just takes it like Jesus did almost. It's almost like he just sits in, okay, and he doesn't confront it back. He just absorbs it, and it's intriguing. And Tom and I and another individual went to a Christian university, and it was interesting because we were talking to the president, and as it turns out, Tom knew a number of the people the president did, and just their experience, it was so intriguing to watch them both, because the president of this college shook Tom's hand and then gave Tom a business card, and Tom immediately, based on how the business card was given, said, "Ah, you're an international traveler," just by how he handed him the business card. And it was interesting because we sat down with the president of the university, and then he brought in his I think it was the dean of the business school and business professors, and it was so intriguing because we had spent over 20 years, over two decades, building a business system from all over the world, all different industries, all different things, and Tom had said, he said, "Mark," when he saw the business system, he said, "I have never in my life ever seen a system that's so universal and works at all different levels and so simple, but yet so deep." He said, "I've never experienced anything like it." And so we talked to, you know, the dean of the and the president of college and everything, and we're talking, and it was interesting because they said, you know, "Well, we've done research on a whole bunch of entrepreneurs." We're like, "Really? What have you discovered?" Because my experience with entrepreneurs is most of them are in an unconscious competence state, meaning that they don't even know why they're successful. They just kind of are, because they're really good, put a lot of time in, worked really hard, and so they often don't know what they want. So I was really intrigued to find out what research showed up. And they said, "Well, what we're finding is that entrepreneurs want want integrity." And I didn't confront it because I've learned that with often people in high positions and then people who academically are really smart, they don't want you to ask questions. Because if you do, I don't know, it just tends to... You know, I found this with pastors too often. And so after we left, I said I was so aching to ask the question, like, so their whole focus of their whole business school was integrity. And I wanted to ask them, but I knew I shouldn't. So how do you teach that? And Tom and the other individual that was with us started laughing and said, "We wanted to ask the same thing." So all three of us thought the same thing. All three of us have owned our own companies. Tom, been international, you know, leader of a company. Internet, both others, best-selling, other individual, best-selling author, you know, author, speaker, owned a number of companies, done consulting and coaching. And all three of us thought the same thing. It's like, that's intriguing. Like, how do you teach that? What's interesting, so here's their whole platform was based on integrity. And I have personal experience with a number of their students, and the one thing that I would say that's universal with all the students I've met with from them is they lack integrity. I mean, really deep integrity. Like they say, like one student said, "I'm going to do a 6-month internship," and he did a 2.5 month internship, got everything out of the internship, learned it, and then when it was start to applying it and where we would get our money back from what we put into it, he quit. And then what was even more intriguing, just blew my mind, they said they'd think about it, and I'm like, they're not going to think about this. I don't know why, but they're going to reject it. And sure enough, about 2-3 months later, they rejected it. They said, yeah, it doesn't fit in with our vision of what we want to do, only to come to find out that the professors develop their own curriculum and they actually they charge the students for it, and they make money based on, and this is a well-known, very high-level Christian university, and the professors get paid on the curriculum that they develop. So I'm like, if and this is like an university that bases it on integrity, and it's like, so let me get this straight. You have decision makers that get compensated based on making the decision to accept their own curriculum, and somehow that's integrous? And I'm like, you know, and I still, and I never confronted the situation because I'm like, you know, that's not going to go so well. And it's like, it's interesting. I've asked another, like in the bio, it talks about, you know, don't allow knowledge to puff up. Or knowledge puffeth up. It's a statement. Knowledge puffeth up. And I asked pastors and I asked academians, I said, okay, so what you're doing in churches is instilling a ton of knowledge. And I come from a GRBC background, so very strong biblical teaching, and I appreciate that so much. I love that teaching and the foundation that it gave me. So I understand, I think, the value of the strong teaching, but I'm like, how do you prevent that from puffing up?
That's the difficult thing.
And I've never come up with what I think is the answer, and I think the answer is it's actually a very simple answer, and that is go out and do what you're teaching. I mean, if you have someone who has like 3 PhDs in child psychology, they're really smart intellectually. They know so much, like you say, reading the books. Well, how do you humble that person? It's so simple. Have them have a child. And so the application of the knowledge is what creates the humility. And if you're not actually applying what it is you're teaching, people will often say, wow, you're really smart, you really know. And it's like, well, I'm really not. You mean your stuff doesn't work? Well, not so much. I mean, not as much as you'd think it would. So, like, what's the solution in academia for that? I mean, is it as simple as saying, listen, you have to have 5 years of practical experience in doing what you're teaching? Is that what it is? And then what's, like,
no, I don't think there's really any simple solution, because what you're talking about is trying to motivate people to do what you need them to do and keep them motivated. And that, there's a gazillion ways to try that, but it works differently with different people, and it's just a difficult thing. But you talk about a guy who has tremendous career success, but think about it. Career success is all about the past. It doesn't say anything about today. And what that guy is really getting paid for is the decisions he's making today. Now, sure, he's got a track record, but isn't it difficult not to rest on your laurels? Success really means how close are you to the center of God's will today, not last week or for the last 30 years, but today. And that's a tough question for everybody. I don't care how successful your career has been. Everybody faces today with the same temptations, doubts, difficulty in hearing from the Lord to make today a success. And so it's true also, one of the problems in the academe that makes it perhaps more difficult there than in some entrepreneurial areas is that the academe is very credential oriented, and credentials always speak of past success. Hey, you got your MA. Oh, but he got his PhD, and he's done this, and he's done that, and he's written 59 papers, and so on. Okay, but really what I want from this guy is what he's going to produce today. He's got a class, and he's got students, and something has to be accomplished in that class. There's got to be a connection between him and those students. And there's going to, and that's a Holy Spirit thing. He's either going to be anointed there or he's not. And I don't care how many degrees he's got and how many papers he's written in the past. Is what? How humble is he? And how malleable is he in the sight of the Holy Spirit to do what needs to be done today? And we all fall prey to that, and the more credentials we have, the more success we have, the more of a trap it is to do the right thing, to work in an anointed way today.
See, that is so intriguing. When you talk, like, this is the thing that just interests me so much. One of our clients was looking at building he's building a sales force a couple years ago. And he says, Mark, how do I motivate my salespeople? And I'm like, man, that is a great question. And so we talked some, and I didn't have a good answer. And he said, you know, Mark, Jim Rohn says that if you don't, you know, he says, Jim Rohn says, I don't know how to motivate people, so I find motivated people.
Yeah.
And this was right after he had passed away, and I said, I so wish, like, Jim Rohn was alive, because if he was, I'd have a couple questions. One of those would be, well, what if one of those unmotivated people is one of your own children? And, you know, I'm like, that's a good question. And because I think, you know, at least one of my seven, maybe a couple, are not as motivated. Maybe all of them are not as motivated as what I think they ought to be. So I started out on a journey to find out the secret to motivation. How do you motivate people? And I ask all the thought leaders that I know, and I look at my 3 bachelor's degrees in business, finance, management, marketing. I, for the life of me, could not figure this out. So I'm talking to my 2 nieces, who were 5 and 7 at the time, and I was writing a book with them on relationships for a lifetime. And their perspectives as a 5 and 7-year-old were just amazing. So I asked them, I said, girls, Uncle Mark's on the pursuit of how to motivate people. And you probably don't know Mr. Rome, but he's an amazing worldwide guy. He's the one that trained Zig Ziglar and Tony Robbins. I mean, he's like the father of them all, the grandfather of them all. He's amazing. And he says, if you know, he doesn't know how to motivate people, so he finds motivated people. But Uncle Mark really needs to figure this out. Do you girls have any ideas? And Brianna, bless her heart, 7 years old, she says, well, Uncle Mark, she's like, the way that, you know, in Girl Scouts that they motivate us to sell is to share stories. And I'm like, here I have all this education. I have, you know, 40 46 years at the time. I think I was 46 years old at the time. I have 46 years of business. I'm an international speaker and author, and I could not articulate how to motivate people like a seven-year-old could. And I thought, well, Jesus, how did he motivate people? Like, he's a master of parables. He's always telling stories. And I'm like, wow.
Well, she figured out at seven how graduate business schools teach, which is the case method. What is the case method? Telling stories.
Wow. So we are out of time today, but I don't know, Ralph. These things are just, they give me energy. We're going to post them on a blog and share them with other and put them on some websites and stuff like that. And, you know, I just want to thank you and bless you for, you know, just being so open with your understanding and wisdom and the humility and just everything that God's blessed you with. I could just sit here for, I think, hours. You've triggered 2, 3, 4 other thoughts that we'll pick up next week. Like, one of the questions I have is, it seems like the older we get, the more that we tend to focus on, you know, the history and all the war stories of all the things we've done. And it does seem that often we're not focused in on the present and what are we doing today. So we'll pick that up and a whole bunch of other topics. Again, if you're listening to the rebroadcast and you say, wow, this is kind of cool, I'd like to be more involved in groups or other types of things, connect with the individual who invited you to participate in today's session, or you can call toll-free 888-230-2300. That's 888-230-2300. Thanks, Ralph. Really appreciate it. God bless.
God bless.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.